Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the sixth episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast Micro, or GameBuoy Micro for short. Your occasional parfait of left-of-center gaming news nibbles and views vittles that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
I love parfaits.
Today is March 14th, 2015, and we're gonna take about 40 minutes of your day to talk about 20 years of Chrono Trigger. That, of course, makes this episode GameBuoy.org Video Game Podcast Micro Episode 6, The Brink of Time, 20 Years of Chrono Trigger.
Now, if this is your new podcast plus, you can just rewind and maybe finish it in about 15 minutes.
Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to the inevitable return of the GameBuoy Micro format.
GameBuoy Micro format.
This week, we're using the format to supplement our Kirby retrospective, which we've obviously been trying to birth for the last month or so. We're going to be taking a look at what is, I think, one of the most beloved JRPGs of all time.
Of all time.
In celebration of its 20 years of existence.
Not a teen anymore.
This discussion is going to be spoilery, so if you haven't played Chrono Trigger, and shame on you for listening if not, and you plan to do so, you might want to jump ship now. Otherwise, let's dig right into this thing. Slaggy, do you want to knock the easy stuff out of the way real quick? Talk about when this game was originally released and who worked on it?
Yes, so this, of course, is a Super Famicom Super Nintendo Entertainment System game, originally releasing in Japan on March 11th, 1995. Hey, it's March of 2015. It's 20 years old. Perfect timing for this micro.
That was literally the plan.
I know. And it came out here in North America on August 22nd, 1995. So, you know, really during that height of the amazing, most wonderful console of all time, in my opinion.
I think many of our listeners would agree.
And, of course, what was even better than the fact that it was a Super Nintendo JRPG was the fact that it had arguably the best talent, even, you know, to this day, regarded as some of the best talent in the Japanese industry, because this was a collaboration between Hironobu Sakaguchi-san, of course, who is the creator of the Final Fantasy series, Yuji Horii, who is the creator of the Dragon Quest series, so a little Square Enix canoodling before Square Enix actually canoodled, and, of course, Akira Toriyama-san, who you probably know best from the Dragon Ball manga and anime series.
Absolutely.
And in addition to that, they had some assistance from
such notable names such as Kazuhiko Aoki-san.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had some musical contributions from Nobuo Uematsu. So, I mean, this was just like a real dream team of JRPG talents at the time.
Indeed.
And you know, one of the funny things about it is, of course, you don't hear about Yasunori Mitsuda-san as a part of the Dream Team. This, of course, now seems silly. We talk about Yasunori Mitsuda-san, and it's just like, you know, he's one of the greats.
Right.
But this was really the game that made him, you know, sort of built his career into what it is today.
I mean, can we take a minute to talk about how Chrono Trigger came to be?
Absolutely, if you'd like to start that up.
Yeah, so, you know, the aforementioned Dream Team of Sakaguchi-san and Horii-san and Toriyama-san were actually on a research trip to America. They were researching computer graphics. I mean, surprise, Square, interested in computer graphics, right?
Right.
And, you know, they really wanted to create something no one had ever done before. And I'd say they accomplished in many ways, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, you know, they brainstormed within, and of course, this was a Square game. All my understanding is that at this point, Yuji Horii was freelance. Is that true?
That certainly matches my memory of the time. I couldn't strictly speak, you know, as an American child at the time. I don't have, you know, a lot of real contemporaneous awareness of his employment situation.
Yeah, I was like 8 when this started getting developed in 1993.
But yeah, that is how I recall it.
Yeah, and so, you know, like a lot of ideas were pitched around within the Square offices, And eventually they ended up settling on the idea of a time travel themed game.
Well, and you know, something that's interesting about that is during the game's sort of early iterations, they actually had intended to do this as a Seiken Densetsu franchise game. So, you know, it's really interesting to sort of think about how different this game really could have been.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, you were saying.
I know, just something that I found out much, much later on is that Yuji Horii-san is a huge fan of time travel stories. So, it makes sense that that's the, you know, direction it really, end up going to, so,
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, at one point, they were actually going to make it a, Super Famicom CD game. You may recall that the Super Famicom CD system add-on never came out.
Well, I guess in a way, it eventually did become a Super Famicom CD game.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could argue that. But something that's interesting about their transition to a cartridge-based format is that that actually enabled them to do the game's sort of much-advertised seamless battle transitions on the field map. You know, unlike most of the Final Fantasy games and even Dragon Quest games, which were sort of bog-standard JRPGs at the time, you didn't have random encounters in this game so much as you would see enemies on the map, and when you would run into them, you know, or run into their area of attack or what have you, the game would just shift into the combat system, and you know, you didn't have like the whole transition with the screen going dark and then different art with the characters lined up on one side of each screen. Your characters would actually jump into predetermined positions to attack whatever enemy you were attacking. And funny enough, that actually allowed them to play with sort of placement and area of attack effects, wherein with the Final Fantasy series and the Dragon Quest series both, you would often have, battles where every ability could either attack one enemy or all enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you're doing on your friends would work on one friend or all friends.
Yes.
In Chrono Trigger, because of the way that the seamless battle transitions worked, and people would sort of have their weapons drawn where they were standing or in a specific spot in relation to the enemy, certain abilities would or would not be available to you based on your location relative to your friends or your allies and your enemies. So there are certain attacks that are like, Chrono has a wave burst that comes out of his sword, and if you have a lot of enemies that are in a direct line from Chrono, you can hit all of them with one attack. And if they're located where you can only hit one, then that's the only one you're gonna hit. Stuff like that really hadn't been done in a turn-based JRPG before, which really plays a lot into this whole idea that, you know, they wanted to do something no one had ever done before, and again, it was in a large part enabled by the fact that they stuck to being just a Super Famicom cartridge for this title.
Yeah, and I mean, the first time I ever played Chrono Trigger, I was like, what is going on?
Oh yeah, and we'll talk a lot more about how interesting that is, because there is some further wrinkles on that system, even from there. But
little side note, it also took me longer than I'd like to admit to realize that you could cast on all of your allies and such in Final Fantasy.
Yeah, and most Final Fantasies back in the day was just you hit the R button.
Yep.
Ah, well. Is there anything else you want to say about sort of the how this game came about?
No, just, you know, again, that it's just funny that Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy joining together in holy matrimony before, a good couple of years before Square Enix even became a thing, so.
Excellent. Well, then I want to talk a little bit about the music.
Like Hannah Montana, it was the best of both worlds.
But you're right. I do think it was the best of both worlds. And I think that's a big part of why we all look back on it so fondly. Like, even the Final Fantasy fans and the Dragon Quest fans both, we all just look back on this game so fondly. I think it is because it really crossed the bridges for a lot of us.
Hmm.
So,
well said.
So I want to talk about Yasunori Mitsuda-san. You know, you may have noticed we mentioned Nobuo Uematsu-san in that Dream Team for Chrono Trigger's development.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually only developed a small handful of songs, developed songs, lol. He only wrote a small handful of songs for this soundtrack. The vast majority of them were written by Yasunori Mitsuda-san, and this was his big claim to fame. This was like his first games work, and it was like a knock right out of the park.
I'd say.
He was heavily influenced by jazz music, Celtic music.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
and a lot of classical composers, including, you know, Dvorak, Debussy, and that kind of stuff.
Are you talking about my Debussy?
That is exactly why I said that that way. Thank you very much. But no, it's, you know, and you can really hear it in his music. Something really interesting is he claims that the theme to the ending theme of Chrono Trigger actually came to him in a dream.
Oh, wow.
Right? How fascinating is that?
He's a radical dreamer.
Ah, right? And it's funny you say that because the music design is such a big part of Radical Dreamer, which we'll talk about a little later.
Yeah, and, you know, Mitsuda-san had a really interesting story in the development of Chrono Trigger.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, he at Square had been mostly doing, like, sound effect design. I believe Final Fantasy V was one of the games he worked on, and, you know, a lot of the other games around that era. And he really, even though he was, like, you know, hired to be a composer, he was getting frustrated. So he approached Sakaguchi-san, and he said, you need to let me compose music for one of your games, or I'm going to leave Square. And he was like, okay, why don't you score this project, Chrono Trigger? And thank goodness he did. But, you know, he really worked himself nearly to death. I mean, that might be an exaggeration, but
it's actually not. He at one point had a hard drive failure, and actually, as I recall, had like a severe panic attack.
Well, not to mention the stomach ulcers.
Well, that is actually related. At the same time, you know, he formed stomach ulcers. He started to have digestive tract issues. I mean, he nearly killed himself over this game. We've talked here on the show, yeah, about how some of these greatest Japanese games that we love so much were developed by people who are practically working themselves to death. Yasunori Mitsuda-san definitely falls into that category for his work on the music in Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, and I mean, just, you know, I think that anyone who is, you know, even a little bit of a fan of Chrono Trigger will, you know, really, the music is, you know, one of the things that they will always remark on. And I know that anytime you mention, well, not you, but anytime anyone mentions Chrono Trigger, you know, I'm just like, doo, 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 doo. I better stop now, or I will keep going.
So is that your way of saying that that's your favorite Chrono Trigger song?
Oh, easily. I mean, I just, and I mean, really, you know, we're going to talk more about our personal experiences with the game, but, you know, when you first go into that Millennial Fair, I was just like, oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and this is probably as good a time as any to point out, if you have somehow made it this far in your life, you're listening to this show, you love Chrono Trigger, you know the music we're talking about and why it's so special and so powerful. If you have never listened to the acid jazz arrangement disc called The Brink of Time that was released for this game, it's what this episode is named after, you need to buy it right now. You need to find a copy of this CD, get it off iTunes or something. This, to me, is the definitive arrangement album for any game.
I've actually never heard that.
It is an incredible piece, long-form piece of music. It is just, it's unbelievable that this thing effing exists. It is real art. And funny enough for me, I actually had a friend who had imported this record.
I was just going to say, I'm surprised you didn't import it.
And he hated it. He sold it to me for $5, which
he
paid several times that when he got it back in the 90s. Back when getting a CD from Japan meant you were paying, you know, $50, $60.
Right.
And he hated it because it's a really radical reinterpretation of the music in some ways, but it really brings out such different influences and different aspects of the music as written. It's just an amazing way to experience the music. You absolutely need to check it out if you haven't already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I honestly never knew about that, so
that's cool. I will let you borrow my copy.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Maybe a nice glass of wine.
Oh, that would be a lovely way to experience this piece of music. Slaggy, do you have anything else you wanted to say about the development of this game or the music?
You know, not really that I can think of.
Well, then why don't we start talking about the content of the game itself? You're familiar with the story of Chrono Trigger?
Yes, there's a Chrono and a Trigger, and Chrono Trigger's the Chrono Trigger.
You bitch! Why don't you lay out the premise for our listeners?
So basically, everything gets set into motion. There is our silent protagonist, Chrono, and his good friend, Luca. And she is like a, you know, really techie sort of inventor, teen
mad inventor, teen girl.
Exactly. And so, Chrono is at the fair and runs into Marl, who is just this girl who ends up actually being the princess. And so they're at the Millennial Fair, and basically Marl's like, ooh, I want to go on the teleporter, because Lucas's like, oh, what's up? This is my teleporter. No big deal. And something-something pendant magic time portal. And so basically, you know, Marl ends up getting kidnapped because they thought that Marl was one of her ancestors, and she briefly disappears from existence.
So I'm assuming that this part of the story is known to most of our listeners. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but, you know, you're hitting the big notes. Chrono, there at the Millennial Fair to support his friend Luca. Something I love about their dynamic and their relationship is that they don't have any kind of, like, a love issue.
Mm-hmm.
There's no love triangle. You know, spoiler alert, Chrono and Marl do kind of have a relationship thing happen. But Luca and Chrono, no, they're just bros, they're BFFs. And when this girl who introduces herself as Marl sees Luca's teleporter project at the fair that she's there to present, Marl's the first person to volunteer to be teleported. As Slaggy was saying, her pendant interferes with the teleportation, and she's drawn into a portal. Chrono, of course, being the character that he is, you know, he doesn't talk, but he pushes Luca to open up another portal for them to follow her. They end up 400 years in the past to find Marl living in the castle of that time period. Unfortunately, she's taken the place of one of her own ancestors who has been kidnapped. Because the kingdom has called off their search for the ancestor who was kidnapped and who hadn't yet given birth to the progeny that would eventually give birth to the progeny that would eventually give birth to Marl, Marl begins to disappear. Not entirely dissimilar to Back to the Future, but with, you know, magic and swords and talking frogs. I bring up talking frogs at this point because one of the big characters of the game, one of, like, the fan favorites,
right,
is a heroic frog, sort of built from the same cloth as Cyan from Final Fantasy VI.
He really is Frog Cyan.
Yeah, right?
But also a little queer, right?
You know, he has a storyline with his sword teacher, the man who taught him how to be a swordsman, and it's not like super queer, but you know, I see how you could read that into it. He's certainly more interested in his dead swords buddy than he is in any girls in the game.
Aww.
You know, and from there, basically, you have to sort of stop this paradox from happening, but basically everything that happens in the game leads to another paradox being created, all sort of very butterfly effecty, that ultimately leads to the crew of Luca, Marl, whom they eventually do recover, Chrono, Frog at one point, you know, finding out that in the future, the world is going to be destroyed in the year 1999.
Which was also prophesized by the great artist Prince.
You know, it's going to be destroyed by a giant alien life form known as Lavos, that in 1999 is going to burst forth from the crust of the Earth and just destroy everything. After finding out about this, Chrono, Marl, Luca, Frog, they end up meeting a wise artificial intelligence robot, appropriately named Robo.
Aww.
And they basically decide, you know, as a group, to travel through time righting wrongs and trying to find out a way to stop Lavos from destroying everything.
I'm sorry, I thought you were going to say righting wrongs and triumphing over evil. And that means you.
No, so, you know, the story for Chrono Trigger, it's more sci-fi than any of the Final Fantasies or Dragon Quests had been to that point.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I would almost argue that the experimentation they did with this opened up the, you know, more sci-fi direction. And we definitely think of Seven in that regard, but, you know, I think also just considering that really made it unique. Like you said, it was a blend of sci-fi and fantasy, and it worked really well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not going to say too much more about the story. If you're listening to the show, you're probably familiar with how it all ends up. I just want to point out, you know, one of the things people love about this game are the characters. All of these characters are somebody's favorite. You know, we have Frog. He's like a chivalrous knight who was turned into a frog due to a dark magician named Magus.
I think Frog's probably my favorite, honestly.
You have Magus, who you know, was sort of like the secret character in a way. I mean, he's not very well hidden, but basically, after a horrible event happens in-game, you can actually recruit him over to your side if you answer a dialogue prompt correctly. Many people do choose to do this because he's super powerful, he has a super cool design, he's basically like a vampire demon magician. I mean,
right.
He's not really a demon, he's not really a vampire, but in terms of the way he's designed, he looks that way. He wears a cape, he wields a scythe, just super badass. You go back in time to, like, 65 million BC or something, and you meet a cave woman named Isla, and she's really cool because she attacks things just straight up with her fist, but she has, like, the highest natural attack rating in the game. So she is, like, a badass woman who just destroys things with her fist. And you know, obviously we've already talked about Luca and Marl and Robo, and something that's cool is that these characters, while they are all very tropey in some respect, they all have wrinkles that make them more interesting. You know, again, Isla is awesome because even though she is a woman, in her time she's like sort of in the position to lead her caveman tribe, and her husband takes sort of the more matronly, like, family support role, while Isla is the sort of hunter in that relationship. You know, we have Frog, who, even though he is a self-hating knight, which feels very tropey for a JRPG, at the same time, he's always willing to help. He's a very intelligent character, despite being, you know, 400 years in the past of our main cast. We have Marl, who is a tomboy princess, but she sort of comes out over her own tropes because she's genuinely really caring. She shows a ton of compassion throughout the game, and really just works to sort of make things right in the same kind of way that a hero typically is written in these JRPGs of the time. Chrono, of course, is notable for being a silent protagonist, as Slaggy had said. He has no dialogue in the game, and so it's sort of one of those situations, almost Gordon Freeman-esque, where the person playing the game, is sort of asked to imprint themselves on Chrono and have these personalities around them guiding you and into what you're going to do.
Right.
So, I'm sorry, Slaggy, you said your favorite character was?
Frog. And, you know, funny enough, I was assuming this is a magazine. Famicom Tsushin had a Chrono Trigger cross review, and by far, of the main characters, Frog overwhelmingly was the favorite.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I know people who, before even playing the game properly, were listening to MIDIs of Frog's theme, which is like one of the big standouts on the OST. Like,
oh, Glenn.
Yeah, so Glenn was a...
You go, Glenn Froggo.
Glenn is the name of Frog before he became a frog. He was sort of training with his buddy Cyrus, who is the one who was killed. He was sort of Frog's buddy that taught him how to wield a sword. Killed by Magus, so, you know, there's a lot of animosity there. Now, but something that I also love, this game was much vaunted at the time for the fact that it had, 12 endings initially?
Right.
And they have since added in various ports a couple of endings, which is actually kind of interesting. We'll get to that. But, you know, in endings, something that's really cool about the character development and quality of writing in this game is that there are endings that basically address Frog and Magus coming to terms with who each other is, and not just fighting it out, not just killing one or having, like, a decisive battle to figure out who's right and who's wrong in this feud. Although there is an ending that is exactly that, they don't all focus around that, and there are different ways that, you know, depending on when you end the game and sort of the status of your party when you end it, these characters can actually develop pretty wildly and differently, and so each time you play the game, and this is especially true for your first time through it, the story experience can actually be pretty different, which certainly for a SNES-era Squaresoft JRPG was unheard of.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just talked a little bit about the cast of this game, which is actually a smaller cast than most of the Final Fantasies of the era had.
Oh, you know what? Final Fantasy VI had, what, 16 main characters or so?
So I want to talk about the mechanics of the game itself. And I want to talk specifically about the battle system in a minute, but first I want to just talk about time travel, because this is an easy one. Once you have been questing with your party for, you know, a few eras in time, and you're stumbling upon, you know, time portals and sort of going at sort of the whims of time and the time stream itself, which is actually a topic the party discusses in, you know, a couple of really cool, like, campout scenes, where they're basically trying to decide if
Because every good JRPG needs a campout scene.
Right? Where they're sort of trying to work out amongst themselves if the time stream itself is guiding them to these moments, like some kind of episode of Quantum Leap. But you end up getting a time machine, and you can sort of at will fly to different eras in the game world. And each world map is completely different, but clearly designed to be like a world as it's first building up and flourishing, and then after the Lavos attack, those time periods, the world is falling deeper and deeper into decay. And at the time, there wasn't really another JRPG that did anything like this, so it was just really wildly inventive. It really captured a lot of people's imaginations. A lot of people talk about Final Fantasy VII as like the game that turned them onto JRPG. But when this game came out and I was in junior high, I knew a lot of people who were playing this as their first JRPG who were absolutely super into it. And in fact, you know, we've talked about my roommate here, Space Pirate Ben. He's super into Chrono Trigger. I'm pretty sure Chrono Trigger is his favorite game of all time.
That doesn't surprise me.
And I think that is true for a lot of people. Well, we asked our listeners about that in our social links this week, so we'll get to that. But the battle system, something that's really, really cool about the battle system. You know, I talked about the seamless transitions to the sort of combat screen, rather than having, you know, like a forced breaking off point and then, you know, coming back up in battle. Something else that Chrono Trigger evolved was the active time battle system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, very similar to Final Fantasy four, five, and six, you did have the ATB meter that was building under your character, and once it reached its, you know, max, it was that character's turn to go. But in Chrono Trigger, the way that sort of evolved from the earlier versions of the active time battle system, the way that it evolved the ATB system was that every character's speed stat specifically changed the rate at which their meter would come up. Rather than sort of these earlier Final Fantasies where everyone just had a set number of time until they were going to get to act again. In Chrono Trigger, certain characters, the faster ones, were just going to get more turns, basically. and, you know, this was something really, really neat because we also had a system in the game called Combo Techs. And what Combo Techs would do would let you use the abilities of two different characters in tandem in order to create new, more powerful abilities. There were such varied things as, like, combining fire attack and a sword attack so that you were attacking with a flaming sword. There was one that was, like, doing, like, a wavy spin of, like, a laser and combining that with a healing magic so that it became, like, a healing wave to all of your parties within a certain area of space. You know, sort of bringing up the area of effect that we were talking about earlier. So this game, again, this was another way that it really took the ideas of Final Fantasy, and less so Dragon Quest, because I love Dragon Quest, but let's be real, it's not really a super forward-thinking game as JRPGs go. But Chrono Trigger, really, the Dream Team experimented with sort of what was expected of JRPGs and came up with new ways to do things that, you know, I really think we still see some of these ideas in JRPGs in the modern age. In fact, I think people even still have really fond memories specifically of Combo Techs, and I think that's a mechanic people really like playing with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something else that's cool is that the combo techs really depended on which characters you had in your party. So once you got far enough into the game to start choosing the group makeup of your party, like every slot of the three character slots you could have active at a time, it didn't feel like they were interchangeable puzzle pieces like some people felt Final Fantasy VII felt a little bit, you know, where once you had people equipped with all of the right materia,
yeah,
it was basically just who's holding this materia. In Chrono Trigger, very specifically, if you wanted a specific combo tech, you had to make sure you had two of your slots full with the right people. And there were combo techs that involved all three party members. Basically, every combination of three that you could have had a combo tech all three together. Not every, literally, but most of them. And this was, again, again, a system that I think when other games do it, people get really excited about. I think this is the kind of thing people really like playing with.
Mm-hmm.
It was also present in the similar era JRPG Phantasy Star 4. Actually not done nearly as well. That was very, very tricky to do. A lot of people who play that game don't even know it's a thing. I think when they pull off combos on the rare occasion it'll happen when you're not trying, I think they're just like, what the hell was that? So Chrono Trigger, though, they put it on the menu. They made sure you knew it was possible to do it. And really, that paired with this ATB2 system, it was sort of became like, okay, well, Chrono can attack twice in the time it takes Marl's bar to build once. So I'm going to have Chrono attack once and then wait so that he can do a combo tech with Marl. And it added a whole new realm of strategy for this kind of game. Especially, again, paired with the fact that you had these positioning issues to worry about, you had area of effect issues to worry about, and so it really, in a lot of ways, brought an entirely new experience to JRPG battles up to that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think really, you know, we definitely saw the Final Fantasy series branch out with, you know, I mean, you think of, like, all the grid spheres and stuff, and, like, you know, I mean, this isn't Final Fantasy buoy, but, I mean, I think definitely we have Chrono Trigger to thank for, not that there was anything wrong with, you know, 4, 5, and 6 in the way that their battles played out, but, I mean, there was definitely a different level of thought put in strategy, like you said.
So yeah, absolutely. And, you know, something I just want to point out is that a lot of these systems actually came back, funny enough, in the Final Fantasy XIII series of games. Most specifically, some of them in Final Fantasy XIII 2 and some in Final Fantasy XIII 3.
Which also played with time travel, if I'm not mistaken.
And that's exactly why I think it's interesting to note. You have issues where your location on the battlefield is very important. And you know, area of effect issues again, time travel, plot stuff. So it's really funny to think that it took that long for the Final Fantasy series to borrow so much wholesale from Chrono Trigger, but certainly some of these ideas carried over even as soon as Final Fantasy VII, I would say. Particularly with regard to how the actual active time battle bars and stuff grow.
Yeah.
So, Slaggy, do you have anything you want to point out or talk about with regard to the game mechanics? Because I'm ready to talk about how the game was received.
No, just that, you know, it really is a lot of fun to play, and it you know, even to this day, still feels refreshing compared to, you know, your traditional JRPG experience.
Absolutely. You know, Chrono Trigger was huge at the time. In Japan, it sold 2 million copies on the Super Nintendo in its first 2 months of release. It was actually a well-selling game in North America. It sold nearly 300,000 units at release, which was a big deal for a JRPG.
I mean, how much did it cost? Like $80?
Well, actually, it was. It was like a $70 game or something. It has been ported several times, and the ports also always sell pretty well. You know, the DS remake that we talk about, that itself sold nearly 1 million units.
Yeah, and that was a great, probably the best way to play it these days, I would say.
I think you're right. You know, basically every gaming mag at the time, Nintendo Power, EGM, even US PlayStation Magazine, when the port for PlayStation 1 came out, it just got rave reviews. All,
even
you know,
though
10s,
the PS1 port had
5 stars.
Like loading time issues, right? Or was that just for Final Fantasy IV?
No, the PlayStation version does too. The North American PlayStation version does too. But it's still, if that's your only way to play the game, it's really not that bad, let's be clear. So, you know, again, this is a well-loved game. People still talk about it. It frequently pops up on best game ever lists, certainly on, you know, retrospectives of the Super Nintendo as a whole. This is a really well-loved game for a lot of reasons, many of which I hope we've talked about here on the show by now. You know, these Game Boy Micros are really meant to be a short look at these things. I think we're already a half hour in now.
Yeah.
So, Slaggy, why don't we talk a little bit about our own individual experiences with this game and why it's important to us? And if you can start, because I've been talking a lot, I need to drink some water.
Of course. You know, those of you who have been longtime listeners of Game Buoy probably know that I was a little bit later into the JRPG scene. I didn't really have much exposure until PlayStation. So, you know, I started out with Final Fantasy VIII, actually, and then kind of went back. So, you know, my first experience with Chrono Trigger was actually playing it for PlayStation, and, you know, that was released as part of Final Fantasy Chronicles, with Final Fantasy IV was the other, you know, game that was ported with it. That was back in 2001. And, you know, I just, you know, considering I was pretty new to Final Fantasy at that point, you know, I had played 8, and, you know, definitely at that point I'd played 8. I probably had played 7 at that point, and, you know, then I played a little bit of 4. Just, I mean, really, for someone who had been so limited in their exposure to JRPGs, and probably at that point I didn't even realize that Pokemon was a JRPG.
LOL.
So, I think it just really opened my eyes to be like, oh, wow, you know, this is very different and refreshing. Like you said, you know, we were talking about with the mechanics, just a very different experience, and really made me see that there was more to this genre than just, you know, the Final Fantasies. So I definitely think I credit it with really, you know, sparking my interest in exploring more JRPGs. And of course, I definitely think part of the draw too was, at the time I was definitely a Dragon Ball Z fan, like, no shame, whatever. So, you know, even though, I was not around for the original releases. I mean, I was around. I was not born after 1995, but I didn't really experience the original release of this game.
Yeah, but you weren't tuned into it.
Exactly. The fact that, this PlayStation release hit on, right, you know, when Dragon Ball Z was, you know, having a resurgence in North America, I think that, you know, the timing was just kind of perfect. So, you know, of course, and they had the, you know, cutscenes that were all done by Bird Studio, Toriyama-san Studio, and Toei Animation, of course. So I just definitely remember being entranced by it. You know, all the elements we talked about, the music and, you know, just the different characters. And, you know, I knew about Frog before I knew about Cyan. So I think that Cyan, I mean, even though obviously Cyan came first, I'm like, oh, this guy's very froggy.
Thou. You know, and I want to spin off of that a little bit, because I was very tuned in on this game. You know, I was a fan of the JRPGs from day one, practically.
Yeah, I mean, you got your Final Fantasy 1 from the Nintendo Power or something, right? Is that the story?
Yeah, I got Dragon Quest from Nintendo
Power. Oh, oops.
Dragon Warrior, you know. I had the first NES Final Fantasy game when it was a new game. And, you know, so this was actually a big deal to me. You know, Nintendo Power was talking about hyping up the Dream Team. Obviously, this was around the time that Dream Team was still a thing people were talking about with regard to basketball. So it was a
like
big deal.
Like in Space Jam?
Yeah, right. You heard of the Dream Team. Well, we're the Mean Team.
Someone got paid to write that, and it makes me, right? It makes my soul cry every night.
Well, so, you know, I bought into the hype wholesale. I will never forget, you know, I got this game when it came out, Chrono Trigger, along with several people I went to school with, and we all were like freaking out, like, oh my god, did you get it? And somehow we all had gotten it the day before school, and so that day we're at school and we're talking about how we have it and haven't played it yet, and this is like me and three other kids.
Oh, right, because that was like August at that point, and you're probably just getting back into school.
And so it was just like, none of us could, yeah, like, this was like, it was like the first week of school, and so none of us had started it yet, and we're all like, you know, I just need to get through this day at school so that I can start.
You were
this.
Like, what, 7th or 8th grade at that point?
Yeah, 8th, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we all just wanted more than anything to get home and play this damn game. And, you know, the next day we all came to school super tired. We had all done our various, like, sneaking up to stay awake late. And, you know, I didn't have to sneak too much, luckily. But my buddy Miguel, whom, you know, I haven't spoken to in some number of years, but that's not really relevant to this story, he somehow had gotten so much further into the game than me. Like, he had, in one night with just a few hours of playing, made it through several of different time scenarios.
Oh, wow.
He had Robo already. I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? I haven't even gone to the future yet. Are you serious? But
spoiler alert,
When I did finally play the game, to really cut to the chase, it clicked for me immediately. I cannot think, even my beloved Final Fantasy VI/3, I had to play Final Fantasy III a little bit before the game really clicked for me. You know, I love the opening sequence of that game. As an adult, I think it's art. Even at the time, I thought it was just beautiful. But in terms of the story, it took a little while to connect. In part, probably, because, you know, I was not a terribly open-minded person, and the game focused on a woman who was lost in the world and didn't know who she was. And, you know, I was more interested in the adventures of Locke Cole than I was in Tara Branford. Chrono Trigger...
Funny how times change, huh?
Well, right, because, yeah, now absolutely I'm like, Locke can just go jump off a cliff, and Tara is by far the most important thing in that story.
Locke wasn't the one who jumped off a cliff, though.
Ah, burn! To the dead. Or, alternatively, burn from a phoenix.
Anyway,
but no.
Like, so, did you end up, like, marathoning it, or?
This game, it clicked for me so hard that I literally played it once... I hit that weekend, and that first week of school was done. I played this game literally overnight without stopping. Like, that Friday night, I went from Friday night at, like, 6 o'clock until Saturday afternoon when my parents realized I hadn't slept and made me sleep before playing more.
Wow.
I ended up finishing this game that Sunday. I absolutely marathoned it. My first playthrough was, like, 25 hours, and I immediately jumped into the game mechanic we haven't discussed yet, but are going to talk about right now. I immediately jumped into the new option that opened up, the New Game Plus.
Now, was that a secret at the time?
You know, it wasn't a secret per se, but it wasn't super well hyped. Like, I was familiar with it as a concept, but I did not know what it did.
I mean, because it was really the first time that a second quest, so to speak, was taken to this level.
Yeah, to this level. You know, there are some other games you could argue have a second quest, stuff like Zelda.
Or when you play Mario when it's Buzzy Beetles, right?
Yeah. Even Ghosts and Goblins to some extent when you have to replay the game with, you know, that item you get after beating Rushafel or
Lucifer. Oh, do you get to play through in just your boxer shorts?
Something. I'm not going to tell you, because you should play it yourself, but something. So, but this was straight up like everything you had in your first playthrough of the game, you take into this new game. All of your experience and all of your levels and your abilities that are unlocked all carry over. The only thing you lose are key items, because you still have to get them through the progression of the game. This is now a feature we see, maybe not super often, but it's common enough that it's not like an event when a game hits with this mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Chrono Trigger was the first game to do this. And, you know, we mentioned the multiple endings of the game. Basically, the way that works is, once you get the time machine, and even earlier, depending on how you play, you can challenge Lavos at any time.
Mm.
And based on what point in the game and how much you have done and changed, when you fight him determines what ending you're going to get. And most of the endings are based upon what chapter of the game you're in. Your save game file updates with, like, new chapter titles every time you save, and that way you can sort of track, like, oh, I'm currently in a Princess Escapes chapter, or what have you. So, and you know, this was unlike anything, and the only way you could really see this content was by doing a New Game Plus, because if you're just, like, level 14, and you challenge Lavos the first time you see him, you're going to die in one attack. But if you've New Game Plus'd, and so you're doing this at the same point in the story, except now you're level 79, then you might actually be able to kill him, and as a result, get a completely different ending. And it was just absolutely groundbreaking to have multiple endings work that way, to have New Game Plus. Again, you know, the big reason, and I think I can really sum up sort of what we've talked about here, my own experience, the reception of the game, the mechanics, it really all ties into the fact that up to the time Chrono Trigger came out, no game had ever attempted so many of these ideas. Chrono mm-hmm. Trigger really was like an all-new game experience for most of us.
It was ambitious as hell.
Yeah, ambitious as hell. Absolutely. So, you know, that, again, I don't talk about Chrono Trigger as much as maybe I should, because, you know, something I really get into, and I've talked about this here, is customization, growing your character's abilities sort of unique to what you're into, especially, you know, you look at Final Fantasy VI or VII, and I really enjoy those kinds of mechanics. Unfortunately, Chrono Trigger does not have that kind of mechanic. If it did, it would probably be my game of forever. As it stands, I think it is one of the finest JRPGs of all time. I think it has had an enormous impact on JRPG design and just Japanese game design altogether.
It's truly a gem. Truly, truly outrageous. The things that they've done with this game.
So let's start wrapping this up as we always do. I want to talk a little bit about the ports this game has received, so that if any of our listeners haven't played this, but they're somehow still listening to us and this episode, how can they play it? So, Slaggy, you mentioned the DS port.
Yeah, you know, do you want me to just go through quickly
sure.
what each one is? And I like to think, you know, there's basically, you know, kind of four main versions, I guess you could say. You know, of course, the original was on SNES, released in 1995, March 11th, 1995, Japan, August 22nd, 1995, in North America. In 2011, this version received a Virtual Console release for the Wii, and that was April 26th in Japan, May 16th in North America, May 20th in the PAL regions. And then, of course, there was a version as part of Final Fantasy Chronicles, which was released in 1999, November 2nd, 1999.
And what was Final Fantasy Chronicles?
Final Fantasy Chronicles was, once again, Final Fantasy IV and Final Fantasy, not Final Fantasy, Chrono Trigger. Because, so, you know, Final Fantasy V and VI were also Final Fantasy Anthology, correct?
Yeah.
So this was Final Fantasy IV and Chrono Trigger, two fine games. The Japanese release was November 2nd, 1999, and of course, North American release being a little over, you know, a year and a half later, June 29th.
And that was on the PS1, right?
One for the PS1, correct. And the PlayStation version received a PSN release in 2011. I'm not sure if it is separately or as part of Chronicles. I haven't really investigated because at that point the DS port had been out. Or I can't really say DS port. We'll get to that in a minute. That was September 28th, 2011 in Japan, October 4th, 2011 in North America for the PSN release. Now, the 3DS. I wish there was a 3DS version, but the DS version is really, you know, we say the ultimate. There were new dungeons, and, you know, you could use a touchscreen control scheme, which I never personally really cared for. You know, not that I didn't care for it, but I'd rather play it, you know, traditionally. And this was released in 2008, 2009 in the various regions. That was November 20th, 2008 in Japan, November 25th, 2008 in North America, and then in Australia and Europe, respectively, February 3rd and 6th, 2009. There's also, I don't know what iMode is, but apparently that got a release for iMode in Japan on April 25th, 2011. There is also an iOS version that was released on December 8th, 2011, and an Android version that had a Japanese release on December 22nd, 2011, and worldwide on October 29th, 2012. I have literally no experience with the iOS version. I kind of figure if you're looking to play this game, my recommendations would be either, if you can't find a copy of the DS version, buy it on Virtual Console, really.
Yeah, I would overall agree, but, you know, I do feel pretty strongly that, you know, any way you can play this game is
indeed,
worth playing.
Indeed, indeed. And the DS version had a new translation, correct?
Tweaked. It had a tweaked translation. You know, but sort of the most interesting thing about the DS version was that it retained the PlayStation version's animated sequences, but did not feature that game's infamous slowdown issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also had, like, touchscreen functionality and, like, a monster battle side quest that was new to that version of the game.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, again, if you can still have the perfect classic experience in that DS port, and it is, in this day and age, the way to go to play this game. So there's really two more things to talk about here. And that are the two sequels to Chrono Trigger. Exactly. So, everyone is, of course, familiar with the first sequel. That is, of course, Chrono Cross. But really, that is the second sequel.
Right?
The first sequel was released via Nintendo's Satellaview game system for the Super Nintendo. It was released in 1996.
Oh, man, we'll have to do a Satellaview micro, honestly.
All right. So, the first Chrono Trigger sequel is called Radical Dreamers, and it is actually a visual novel. It's meant very specifically to be a side story to Chrono Trigger, and something that's actually really interesting is that it's the basis for the plot of Chrono Cross.
Yep.
Being a visual novel, though, you know, there's very minimal graphics, the game is primarily just something you read with sound effect and music, and the music was done by Yasunori Mitsuda-san. So, you know, something that's really cool is that ROM hackers have actually created an English fan translation ROM of the game.
Yeah, so, and this was one of the few ones that was not, like, time-limited Satellaview, so technically, if you still have a Satellaview ROM cartridge or whatever, you could still play it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's how they were able to rip it and
I guess so,
translate
huh?
it. You know, unfortunately, a lot of content from the Satellaview system was lost completely due to the way it was locked, which I find very, very upsetting. I think we're going to probably end up doing a Chrono Cross Micro once that game has its 20th anniversary, so I don't want to talk too much about Radical Dreamers or
Please
Chrono Cross.
Please look forward to it
but
in, what, 2019?
If you are the kind of person who, if you're open to playing ROMs, I would absolutely, absolutely, absolutely recommend taking a look at Radical Dreamers if you haven't. It really does sort of, it's basically very similar to Chrono Cross, but it's just super interesting, especially as a fan of the series, to see this content and see where some of those ideas that were eventually fleshed out in Chrono Cross sort of started. So, you know, it's pretty neat. I would recommend that the experience. Chrono Cross, though, is a very, very divisive game. Chrono Cross has very little directly to do with Chrono Trigger outside of a cameo of the Chrono Trigger characters that suggests that maybe things did not end very well for them.
Oh.
And the gimmick, rather than time travel in Chrono Cross, is based on parallel dimensions.
Right.
I've talked here on the show about how that is one of my personal favorite tropes in sci-fi and fantasy. I think it's an amazing experience. It was a PS1 game released in November 18th, 1999 in Japan. August 15th, 2000 in North America, and it did get a PSN release as a PS1 classic, so if you have a PS3, Vita, PSP, you can download this game and play it right now. It is a very different experience from Chrono Trigger, but it is experimental in a very similar way. It has a lot of sort of open objectives in a very similar way. It still has New Game Plus, and it has an amazing, amazing, amazing soundtrack by Yasunori Mitsuda, who had had a little more experience at this time, and I really feel he just absolutely knocked it out of the park on this game. I really think this Chrono Cross has one of the best game soundtracks of all time. Slaggy, what are
all
your experiences? What are your experiences with Radical Dreamers and Chrono Cross?
I honestly did not know about Radical Dreamers until very recently. Chrono Cross, I've never gotten that far in, but you know, I guess I have, 4 years to rectify that. But yeah, you know, I am familiar with, you know, most of the people I know who are fans of Chrono Trigger enjoy Chrono Cross. So I do know it has much, 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 much more in terms of playable characters. So almost like the opposite of Chrono Trigger. What is it, like 45?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot. And something that's really cool about it was the game actually used a really interesting, almost like filtering system, where basically they wrote the in-game dialogue in such a way that the game would basically have the same dialogue for all 45 characters based on what your party makeup was, but it would automatically apply like character accents to whichever characters were in your party, so the dialogue read as if it was being spoken by those specific characters. So if you had a character who had like a French accent because he was like a frog chef or something, you know, all of his text would be like, "Oh, wee wee." And it actually ended up, I always felt, I mean, a lot of people go after Chrono Cross for not developing its characters individually, but for me, that they did the dialogue that way actually made a lot of the dialogue feel really personalized to your party makeup, and it always, for me, made me feel a little closer to them. And you know, I'm gonna discuss this in a minute, I didn't want to say it too much during my discussion on Chrono Trigger. We're gonna talk, when we get to talking about our listener feedback on this game, one of the big deals about this game for most people, I think, is how attached they grew to the cast of Chrono Trigger and subsequently Chrono Cross. So, Slaggy, in fact, unless you have anything else to say, I was going to ask you for your closing thoughts, but I know I actually still have more to say about this game that I've been waiting on for our listener feedback section, so I think I'd rather wrap it up.
Yeah, there. Just the fact that, you know, there was the whole Chrono Break trademark that never came to be, and, you know, maybe someday, but, you know, really the fact that Chrono Cross was not Chrono Trigger 2, and, you know, the people involved in Chrono Cross were very clear about that. Even if Chrono Break had or does come to be, it's not like it's necessarily going to be straight up Chrono Trigger 2. Although,
excellent.
Maybe people would like a Chrono Trigger 2.
I think probably a lot of us would.
I think a lot of us would. So, kind of unusual for our micro format, but, you know, given this game and its widespread universal acclaim, we had to ask a question of the week this week for our social links question of the week. So this week we asked, this week we also talk about one of the most beloved JRPGs of all time.
Of all time!
No, not Seventh Saga. Chrono Trigger! What are your thoughts on the game?
And can I just say, I actually reused that Seventh Saga joke today, so I am so sorry to all of you.
So I'm going
to
start out over on Twitter, where we got a tweet from LimeBlue3, saying, amazing story, characters, and replayability. One of my favorite and the best RPGs of all time. I especially love Robo. His story is the saddest. And the desert slash forest side quest best exemplifies his character and values.
Absolutely.
Your Enzyme says, we get a 2 this week? Fantastic. I just wish that I had known that CT would be a topic for discussion earlier. I haven't played CT in more than 15 years. I would have started up a new game. I wish I could remember the story. Well, I have to apologize for not getting a QOTW up earlier so you could replay, but hopefully this inspires you to replay and you will continue to let us know of your experiences.
You know, something we always talk about here is we're always happy to get feedback on previous episodes. If you want to write us about Chrono Trigger next week, 2 weeks from now, by all means, feel free. We love talking about games. We're really passionate about them. And you in particular, your Enzyme, you always have good stuff to say, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on Chrono Trigger.
Braun Dwarf from Nintendo Fun Club says, best in show.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to put it, too.
Gamer Fox says, OMG, I could go on for hours and hours about the things I loved about CT, literally. I'm probably biased, but IDC, my fave.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's something about Chrono Trigger that I love is that Chrono Trigger fans are so passionate about this game.
Mm-hmm. And Gamer Fox even says, faves, character, frog, place, Zeal, era, Dark Ages, baddie, Queen Zeal, tech, Luminaire, NPC, Shala.
Yes!
Is it Scala or Shala?
Always said it as Shala.
Me too. And music, Corridor of Time.
Ah, you have great taste, man.
Over on Facebook, we also asked the bonus question, have you played either of Chrono Trigger sequels? If so, how did you like them? What do you remember about them and the series as a whole? The first one we got was from Austin S., saying, I remember that I liked Chrono Cross much more than Chrono Trigger. Boom. But no, really, Chrono Trigger was a great game in its own right. I remember Lavos being scary to me as a kid.
Yeah, you know, and I have to say, I was actually on that boat myself for a time. I did, for a long time, think Chrono Cross was better than Chrono Trigger, primarily because I felt it's a bigger game. The parallel universe story and trope is one that is a big deal to me. It's one of my favorite in all of fiction. But I will say, I've really come over to Chrono Trigger now, as I get older, especially because the characters are so important to me, and, you know, I've played this game so many times at this point.
One of the rare times where story is important to you in gaming.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime this comes up, we point it out, but, you know, it's the exception to the rule. It's the exception that proves the rule. These games that it is important to me are almost always games that have really great, really relatable stories.
Uh-huh. And I mean, really, Chrono Trigger was really a narratological and ludological triumph.
It's a tour de force in both fields, absolutely. And, you know, I have to say, and this is about to be talked about in our next message, so I want to sort of set it up for that, because this is the one that I was sort of holding off on commenting on. Chrono Trigger was, and I've talked about this here on the show before, the first game to really make me feel things. So many of the character stories here are really, again, very personal stories. I was talking specifically about the Magus frog conflict, because that's the one that I think everyone goes to most easily. But every character who has issues in this game, they're small issues that affect a lot of people around them, and in solving them, you know, the team ends up saving themselves and save the world. I love that dynamic. I love the way the game is written.
That is basically your favorite trope ever.
And the sequence that takes place in the Death Mountain area is probably the first time I ugly cried to a video game. And I'm pretty sure I've talked about that here on the show before, but I'm absolutely attached to this game, and I really think that if you've never played this game, you should really prioritize it for that.
Yeah. Daniel T. says, I could write a novel, but I'll stick to the thing that strikes me the most about Chrono Trigger. That is how incredibly personal so many of the conflicts in the game are. While the game eventually does become a somewhat generic effort, to save the world. You get to the point where resolving each character's personal problems, ranging from confronting a nemesis to protecting a family member from a tragic event. The characters of this game are not that complex, but I became incredibly attached to each of them due to the hardships I helped them overcome. And it continues with, I have very limited experience with Radical Dreamers, but Chrono Cross was such an absolute delight. I will never love a party member quite so much as I loved Pashul. I'm in for a treat, I guess. And to top off yet another incredible soundtrack, the game featured one of the most beautiful and emotional vocal tracks in a Square game ever. And links to a cover,
which we will be linking over at GameBui.org.
And this is a song called Radical Dreamers from Chrono Cross.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a beautiful theme. You know, I actually wept openly the first time I access that vocal track in-game. I had like an incredibly emotional connection. I thought the song was absolutely beautiful. And still to this day, when I listen to it, I have feelings.
Oh man. I mean, I have feelings anytime there's a vocal track on a Square Enix game. So
yeah, this is like the best, basically. So we have one more. Why don't you go for that?
Yes. And that's from Renee A saying, Chrono Trigger was that one RPG that really perfected the ATB system, sharpening it to a fine point and adding such features as dual and triple techniques. Despite the fact that the main character had perpetual laryngitis, it had some great fan-favorite characters and one of the hardest end bosses I've ever gone up against.
And that's something else. The game was mostly pretty easy.
It was, but
Lavos, the game expected you, by the time you were ready to fight Lavos, to know how to play it. It did not pull punches, and I always felt contemporaneous that was like the hardest JRPG boss I had ever done. although obviously once you have all your characters max level by New Game Plusing a couple times, it becomes trivial, but prior to that point, getting like those first couple New Game Pluses was a big deal.
Rolling through the Elite Four in Pokemon with your level 86 Raichu.
Something like that.
Except for you, it'd be Zapdos. No, it'd be Articuno.
Yes. Anyway.
Anyway, thank you so much for your feedback. And like we said, if you would like to send us a belated feedback about our social links this week for Chrono Trigger, please do that at any time. You can do that on Facebook, Twitter, even if you'd like to Tumblr or Google+. You can email at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org. And let's talk a little bit about GameBui.org, because this is a micro-episode. If this happens to be your very first GameBui ever, welcome. This is a shortened format, a little parfait, as you've mentioned, of our regular show, which, you know, please also look forward to the Kirby episode that is being released contemporaneously with this. And where can we listen to actual GameBui?
Always, you know, there is iTunes. You can just find us by searching for GameBui Pirate Podcast.
We're on Stitcher Radio.
We're on Stitcher Radio. We're certainly over at GameBui.org.
GameBui.org. What's that URL again?
GameBui.org.
GameBui.org. Or if you're in a British Australian country, I suppose we're called Game Boy there.
That is what I've heard.
That blew my mind because I don't know how to English, apparently.
Well, we're running late, so let's wrap it up.
All right, if you insist, we'll go climbing our epic.
I do have one special shout-out this week. It's not really related to this episode, but earlier today I recorded a cameo on the Enos Lives podcast. This is a new podcast. It's being done by Brondorf, whom we mentioned and had a listener feedback from just a few minutes ago. He's taking a look, one game at a time, at as much of the PlayStation 1 library as he possibly can. We recorded episode 4 this afternoon. I guested to talk about Choaniki for PlayStation 1.
Oh boy.
I had a lot of fun recording that episode, and
oh,
I would highly,
boy,
highly, highly recommend all of you guys go and check it out.
Yes, definitely. And I hope to be talking about some PlayStation stuff on there, too. So thank all of you for tuning in to our Chrono Trigger 20th birthday celebration. In one more year, we'll be allowed to drink in the United States. And what was it that they changed the alcohol to in the
soup?
Soup.
Yeah.
So go enjoy your soup.
Absolutely. As ever and always, thank you for spending your time with us this lovely Saturday night. We will be back to you guys probably in just a few days. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And ma'am, you're mistaken. I'm not a pet. I'm a knight and master swordsman.
Ha 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 ha!
unbreakable.
It's a miracle. Ahoy, mateys. Welcome to the sixth episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, Micro.
My bad.
The first game on...